This is Crossroads, a Get Religion podcast.
When the history books are written, they will say that George H.W. Bush was a great president of the United States.
Our Father, which art in heaven.
My hunch is heaven, as perfect as it must be, just got a bit kinder and gentler.
Some of the sounds from the state funeral service yesterday of President George Herbert Walker Bush. How does the media cover such an event? It's not just a funeral. A service in an Episcopal church, in this case, the National Cathedral in Washington, D.C., but one attended by five living presidents and one recently deceased, all sitting in a row. And one of those presidents is the son of the president who lies in the casket. How do you cover that? And how do you cover it and still get, despite all of the political flash and dash that goes along with this, how do you still cover the religion angle? Greetings and welcome to Crossroads with Terry Mattingly. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
So, what was missing, as far as you are concerned, in the media coverage of George Bush's funeral?
Well, right up front, I need to admit that I haven't seen any of the Texas service today. I had some family duties that took me away from the television set. So the funeral that took place in Houston, the family's funeral at their home parish, I haven't had a chance to look at it. What interested me, because of my background reading about civil religion and that sort of thing, what really interested me was the state funeral held in the National Cathedral in Washington, because there you're dealing with something that it's an event that really is an affair of American government and culture at the exact same time that it is a liturgical funeral rite, that was done with the explicit involvement and planning of George Herbert Walker Bush, who himself, along with Barbara, his wife, who died earlier this year, was an extremely active Episcopalian in a rather traditional parish in Houston, Texas. So this state funeral, it had perfectly valid and strong elements that were political in terms of some of the eulogies and the presence of all of the living presidents, all of the living vice presidents, their wives, et cetera, et cetera. But at the same time, it's occurring in a cathedral, and Bush requested an explicit, normal, Episcopal funeral rite, which meant you had all of the Bible readings, all of the preparatory prayers at the beginning, all of the prayers at the end. So you had tons of religious content. So anyone who has listened to our discussions of American media in the past understands that to the media, nothing is more important than politics. So what's missing from the coverage, quite frankly, in the overwhelming majority of the coverage, what's missing is the fact that this is a religious worship service, that you had all kinds of religious material that you could quote from the hymns, from the scriptures. This is one of the rare cases. I mean, Todd, just think about this. You had a former president of the United States speaking at the funeral of his father, who was a president of the United States, and his eulogy was not the liturgical high point of the service. When you look at the order and when you look what pulpits, I mean, anyone who knows anything about Anglicanism or liturgical worship knows that when one man speaks from the epistle side and the other speaks in the high pulpit, which is the more important address in terms of the message of this service? It's the man in the high pulpit. And in this case, you have the Bush family's, Houston Bush family's own pastor came up there to speak in the National Cathedral of the Episcopal Church. Now, here's your task. Try to find any coverage in elite print media that contains more than one sentence from that sermon.
You even say that that's kind of a diagnostic for the media coverage.
Device, yeah.
Yeah, so what was the pastor's name again? I don't recall.
Russell Levenson. So, L-E-V-E-N-S-O-N.
So just type that into a search engine versus who?
Of course. Donald Trump. I mean, what percentage of the coverage focused on what did or did not happen involving Donald Trump? Now, I want to stress that, you know, I'm a realist. I know how the media work. And I also know that this is a civil religion event in which there are undeniable political elements, including eulogies that set out to be a summary of this man's public and political career. I mean, you had the former chief of state of Canada speaking, for Pete's sake. You had a hilarious Senate colleague speak. You know, you had a lot of other things going on. So I'm not saying that the press should have ignored the drama of the front row in terms of who shook hands with Donald Trump and who didn't, etc. I'm not saying that at all. I'm simply saying, why ignore? If the goal here, if the most important thing in this story is George Herbert Walker Bush, isn't the content of the service that he helped craft and create as a statement about what he valued and loved, isn't the content of that service maybe 25 or 30% as important as Donald Trump?
So here's how I experienced it, and I work a day job, so I was actually had to watch this on replay, as they say. But I was watching social media, in particular Twitter's coverage of this, and the first two stories from, and this was from, I believe, it wasn't ABC or CBS, one of those, but it was a rather active media outlet on Twitter. The first two stories that came out were the fact that when George W. Bush was greeting his fellow former presidents in the front row, he slipped Michelle Obama a piece of candy. Apparently, that's a private right. joke between the two of them. And the next one was the fact that Donald Trump did not shake hands beyond the Obamas in the line, in particular, Bill and Hillary Clinton. Yeah. There. Those are the two stories, and that first came out after the funeral has concluded. What does it tell you?
Well, once again, Donald Trump is the blazing hot white heat core of the universe when it comes to the news media, even more so than politics would be under normal conditions. It's not hard to figure out which man looked more comfortable in the front row for this entire event on that side of the aisle. And that was Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter looked a lot like a guy that spends a lot of time in church. Surprise, surprise. The other thing, I mean, do we really, I know the white evangelicals voted for Trump. I get all that. I get the drama. But anyone who's paying attention, does anybody at this point think that Donald Trump is a guy that feels really comfortable sitting in church? I mean, throw in the dynamics of having the entire world look at you, and also you would expect the President of the United States to speak at least briefly at a funeral of a former president. That didn't happen here because of a deal between the Bush family and the Trump family that there would be no explicit McCain funeral style attacks on Trump. Yes, there was the subtlety that when George W. Bush opened his eulogy of his father, instead of greeting each of the presidents and first ladies by name, he just said, "We're glad to have the presidents and the first ladies here with us today," which helped him escape having to say the word Trump. All of that, I'm not saying that that should be ignored. What I'm saying is, man, that makes a wonderful sidebar. But if the goal is to write about what this service says about George Herbert Walker Bush, shouldn't that at least be part of the story? I thought the selection of the music was amazing. I found very moving. Now, I realize that in a liturgical church, you have readings that are not prescribed for a funeral, but are highly recommended. So you had some very beautiful and appropriate scripture readings, you know, as you would expect. I mean, the Anglicans are not new to doing big funerals. In the Washington Post coverage, and the Washington Post, as you would expect, went door to door on this thing. I thought the main story in the New York Times was actually quite good. If you were going to look at one story, and I haven't read all the coverage right now, but if you were going to look for one story here that I thought at least made an appropriate strategic reference to faith, it would have been the end of the New York Times thing, which with the sermon at the end, you're allowing Bush's pastor to kind of back clean up here. And here's the quote the New York Times selected to end its main story. "My hunch is heaven, as perfect as it must be, just got a little kinder and gentler." Now, of course, that's a reference to a famous speech and slogan of George Herbert Walker Bush. But then the rest of this quote, turning to the coffin, he said, "Mr. President, mission complete. Well done, good and faithful servant. Welcome to your eternal home, where ceiling and visibility are unlimited, and life goes on forever." I thought that was a wonderful final quote for a story from this funeral. Yes, I would have loved a couple of references to scripture or the hymns or whatever. That's a great final quote. Now, to me, of the things that made me just want to tear my hair out, the Washington Post in its door-to-door coverage of everything except most of the religious content of the service even included one kind of running digital timeline. And here's one of the items in the timeline. 11:50 a.m., Jenna Bush Hagard delivers a reading. The second reading from the Bible's book of Revelation was delivered by another grandfather of the late president, granddaughter of the late president, Jenna Bush Hagard. Hagard, 37, is one of the two daughters of former President George W. Bush. She is known for her work as a contributor on NBC's Today Show, period. Book of Revelation, it's a pretty big book, got a lot in it. You know, any chapter, any verse, any appropriate, I mean, like the fact that the verse is, "Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away." I mean, it is one of the Bible's most famous verses describing heaven, afterlife, death is no more. I mean, I thought they could at least work that into the running timeline. But the Today Show gets a more explicit factual reference than one of the main scriptures from this worship service, read quite beautifully by a granddaughter. When I saw that scroll onto my screen while following this thing, I just wanted to throw something at the wall.
What did you make of the little kerfuffle about President Trump and his wife not participating, at least vocally, in what I would have said is the confession of the Nicene Creed? The media said it was a prayer they kind of seemed somewhat ignorant as to what, where this crazy thing that just happens to be as ancient as the church itself came from. But whether or not he was praying silently or not reciting this creed and what all of that meant, they seemed a little incapable of sorting out that problem.
Well, when it happened, I just put my hands over my face. I went, oh my God, Twitter is going to go nuts, and this is all we're going to see tomorrow. Because, I mean, here you had this row of effectively mainline Protestant presidents who all had their programs in their hand and were all vocally taking part. They sang key parts of the hymns. They took part in the service. Trump basically didn't do anything in the service. He just sat there with the kind of, not a scowl, no way, I'm not saying that, just with your basic serious Trump face. And Melania was pretty much the same. Now, this was the Apostles' Creed as worded in the Episcopal Book of Common Prayer. But it was right there in front of you. Anyone who looked at the program online knew it was there. So, I mean, the point here is, what does this mean about the state of his eternal soul? And that's where I'm just not sure that I'm ready to go that far. Even more, the fact that this was turned into yet another statement about American evangelicals in their love of this man, of course, because that's where Twitter went. Social media left and right pounced. The faith and values of Trump have been a source of debate, division, anger, and mystery since his run for the presidency began, and especially since many religious conservatives embraced him, despite what his critics say is his dishonesty, philandering, crudeness, and policies many see as anti-Christian. Okay, well, we're right back to embraced him, something that we've talked about a lot in previous broadcasts and podcasts. Is it really accurate, based on what we know now about polling, to say that American religious conservatives, especially Catholics and other religious conservatives is the word here, not even white evangelicals, is it accurate to say that they embraced Donald Trump? Or is it more accurate to say that, according to the exit polls, about half of them reluctantly voted for him because that was the lesser of two evils, and many of them did so with serious emotional and ethical conflicts, you know, involved in this action? I just thought this was amazing. Now, what really gets to me about this, and this is a valid point, I believe this was something in the story worth mentioning in a sidebar, and that's right where it is. This is the Washington Post's story about the religious elements of this service. This is the religion sidebar. So, once again, forget the content of the service. Forget the sermon by the man's pastor. Forget the hymns he picked out. Forget the many references to faith, heaven, you know, etc. in this service. When it comes to the religious content of this service, what matters? Donald Trump and religious conservatives. In my post, Forget Religion, at this, I finally just said, okay, I guess I don't understand, because clearly I'm not in the target audience for these pieces.
I think it struck me this morning when I was watching the tail end of this, and I saw a former Secretary of State, and I believe it was probably President Bush's best friend out of his long life of American politics, delivering his part of his recollections and eulogy there. And I thought to myself, you know, how quaint the late 80s, early 90s now seem. And there was kind of a rose-colored lens placed over much of George Herbert Walker Bush in American mm-hmm. life in the recollections and the obituaries. Here's the question that I hesitate to ask, but I'll do it anyway. How much of that is simply saying, do you remember when presidents were gentlemen, when they were nice and kind and didn't tweet nasty things every day.
Well, of course that's what that means. To me, the valid part of it, in the words of the great songwriter Joni Mitchell, "Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone?" I think to some degree, a lot of the television coverage of the state funeral, and again, I look forward to digging in a little bit into the Houston rites, but I haven't had a chance to see them yet. The state funeral, a lot of the television commentary, and I was switching back and forth between CNN and Fox for the actual live presentation. I didn't catch whether CNN did or not. I thought it was good that Fox didn't offer a single word of commentary during the entire service. Once the religious service began, it was allowed to just present itself for your own consumption. A lot of people made the observation that this was a grand farewell to the greatest generation, the World War II generation, and lots of references to the 72-year marriage of George and Barbara Bush. Is it 72 or 73?
I think it's 72, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, which raises an interesting point, and that is that Jimmy Carter was not a World War II veteran because he was in the Naval Academy at that time. And he seems to be in good health, and so does his wife. They'll pass the record for the longest presidential marriage in another year. And on Twitter, someone made the observation, and I just offered this up to say that we've had some very unusual and interesting ex-presidents and even one-term ex-presidents lately. Someone suggested that when Jimmy Carter does die, that on the national day of mourning, that someone step forward and organize a national day of mourning where anyone who wants to can take part in the building of a Habitat for Humanity house that day, that anyone who wants to be released from work to go help build a house somewhere, you know, or at least carry things at a work site for one of these things, that would be a fitting salute to Jimmy Carter, and to which I say amen, 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 totally. But I think what you're getting at here is the degree to which the further we go into the social media era and the further we go into an era where American politics is defined primarily in terms of divisions over religious, cultural, and moral issues, that makes it harder and harder for the nation to agree on what constitutes dignity, a moral life, a religious component of a person's life. I think that a lot of conservatives were horrible in their evaluation of the Obamas as a couple and a family. At the same time, I think there were other conservatives who gave them the salute that they deserved for their home and their marriage and his attempts to, in particular, to call out African-American fathers to be more a part of the lives of their children. So I hear what you're saying, but it really, to me, comes down to Bill Clinton and what that presidency and the fights over that presidency and kind of the sexual revolution and the components of what happened there, and frankly, the role the Supreme Court plays in American life and the fact that so many of the biggest changes in American life in recent decades seem to have been forced on half the country while half the country celebrates. That's just an environment that when you throw a Hillary Clinton and a Donald Trump into that mix, how bitter can that get in terms of the nation trying to make sense out of it? It's been painful for everyone who voted in that election and for those of us who didn't vote or who cast third-party ballots because we couldn't handle the moral quandary of what to do in that election, and now what has followed it.
You mentioned that when you were watching it on Fox News, but you were still flipping around, that Fox was running the funeral service without any kind of commentary or any kind of comment from the Fox News people. Was that true of the other news outlets that were covering the funeral?
Well, I was saying I have no way of knowing. In other words, I switched back over to CNN at several points, and I didn't hear any commentary, but I also didn't hear them at the front say, we will be doing no commentary. So, I mean, I'm not one of these people who has 10 television monitors mounted on his wall and the ability, as I'm sure Donald Trump and other people do, I can't follow that much TV at a time. So, I can't make a definitive statement about that.
So what do you think the average consumer of the media coverage took away from how the media dealt with the state funeral of George Bush?
This is the very rare case in American life where I'm going to say that anyone who only read the newspaper coverage got an infinitely worse presentation of the factual content of this event than people who watched it live on television for themselves. If you watched it live, first of all, I'm sure a lot of Americans, including a lot of people who didn't maybe even think that much of Herbert Walker Bush, you couldn't watch that service and not be emotionally moved by some of the eulogies, by the music, the spectacular music. It was stunning stuff. If you watched the service, you came away with a very strong impression of George Herbert Walker Bush and of the Bush family and what the Bush family thinks about public life, public service, and yes, in that component as well, faith. If all you did was read the stories, this might as well have been some sort of bizarre Donald Trump crashing of a service to turn it into some sort of political standoff, which in many ways is the opposite of what he did. Yes, he showed up. Yes, he walked down the aisle. Yes, he sat there silently in a chair. There are stories out there literally today saying that his silence was his own way of attacking the Bushes. I don't know what to do with that. I guess I have not been gifted with any spiritual gift of being able to read minds.
One last question for you, Terry. There is a generation of Americans, and they are, and I'm thinking about kids that are in college right now, where there is so much foment and so much of the unrest that concerns Americans all over the country, for whom the late 80s and 90s are ancient history.
Yes.
They don't know who George Herbert Walker Bush was, not only in his presidency, but in the really almost legendary life of public service. What do you think they may have learned?
Well, let me tell you what I hope they learned. And this was emphasized strongly both on Fox and at CNN. And those were the two, like I said, I was switching back and forth. And I heard this stressed accurately and appropriately both places. The breaking up of the Soviet Empire and Eastern Europe, it is astonishing that that happened. And the reunification of Germany, it's astonishing that happened with next to zero violence. And when an empire breaks up, let alone one of the dominant empires of the 20th century, when an empire breaks up, that rarely does not devolve into total chaos, which can be dangerous both to those nations and to the nations near them. I hope young people go back and look at the role that George Herbert Walker Bush, and by the way, Saint Pope John Paul II, behind the scenes, along with Ronald Reagan and some others. But Bush, his skills as a diplomat were on display even if you did not see them. And it says something that instead of marching triumphantly and crowing about America's stature now as the number one undisputed power on planet Earth, that Herbert Walker Bush played that down and did it with that modest, self-effacing style of his, I don't think there's any question, based on what I saw in coverage yesterday, that that aspect of his life will only grow in importance. And the further we get from that, I do hope that that shows up as the ringing bell of history's evaluation of him, and that young people have a chance to hear about that and read about that.
Finally, with only about 30 seconds, based on what you watched yesterday, give me your lead for the story.
A giant from a quieter era of diplomacy died in a service that talked about his life and his dreams of the life to come, something like that. I would have tried to combine the religious right and perhaps the most important thing about him as a public figure. I would have worked hard to get those both into the lead somehow.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he is founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thank you very much for being our guest.
Glad to be here.
I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you next week. Thanks for listening to Crossroads with Terry Mattingly.
Crossroads is a joint production of GetReligion.org and Issues Etc.